God is at work, and He's calling His people to rise in truth. Truth Rising is a powerful new documentary from Focus on the Family and the Colson Center. See how ordinary Christians choose courage in a culture that needs truth. Watch Truth Rising starting September 5th and find out how you can be a part of the change and become an agent of restoration. Sign up at truthrising.com. That's truthrising.com.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues. That's the name of this program. Today's Issues here on this on American Family Radio on this Tuesday, August the 19th, 2025. And in studio with me is Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Brother Ed.
Good morning.
And was that like Dracula or was that...
He's my Putin imitation.
Okay, there Russian, you go. That's what I'm talking about. Russian, okay. Russian, the Eastern European, you know, that
it's all
throws me
blends
into
in
conglomerate. I think I'm just used that word.
Dracula would be more like number six.
Yes, that's why we have you, Ed. Do your impersonations.
That's right.
All right, Wesley Wildman. Good morning, Wesley.
Good morning. And how do you say I'm frustrated in Russian?
I'm frustrated.
Because
Russian's kind of, very easy.
I'm dealing with a new phone setup, like most people do at times.
And yeah, you have to convert.
Yeah, so I'm
your old phone to your new phone, the information. So you're doing that.
They're side by side, and one's talking to the other and sending all the information
through the waves.
This is new because I've always done this at the phones, you know, your carrier.
By the way, great job. I'm frustrated in Russian.
Yes. I told you, Russian's not as hard as you might think.
Yeah. You're transferring one phone to your new phone, the information from your, like, your contacts and all that. And
photos,
all you have to do is put them side by side?
Yeah, it takes a little bit. You know, it can vary between 15 minutes and a
Wait a second. How come your stuff is showing up on my phone? You got this thing targeted right?
All right, Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Yeah, enjoying the conversation.
Let's see. Fred, Brother Ray Pritchard's traveling today, right? New Jersey. He's in New Jersey. He's a Jersey.
Why?
He's a Jersey.
Yeah, why would you do that?
Jersey
Stop.
Guy.
Go back. Turn around.
Well, I think he got one of those Word of Life camps, right? I think
okay, in that case, yeah, go ahead.
Ray travels the country
teaching the Bible.
I don't know what you guys do with your life, but Ray has purpose and meaning.
We travel counties and play baseball.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, in the great scheme of things, where's that going to leave you?
That's right. Yeah.
All right, so Ray's out traveling about the country. A lot to talk about today. Thank you for joining us again, Tim, Ed, Wesley, and now Fred Jackson. Fred, what's the lead story right now?
Well, the lead story, you know, there's that saying, a picture is worth a thousand words. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, at least Fox News gave live coverage to a lot of the meetings that President Trump had with the European leaders. And I say picture because there is one image that was taken of this. President Trump sitting behind a desk, and he has these world leaders in a semicircle around him. Like, kind of a godfather type thing. Mm-hmm. Like, and he is, for that moment, the leader of the free world, I guess. But this was all a follow-up to the meeting, the Putin summit in Alaska on Friday. We are told that when that meeting was finished on Friday afternoon, President Trump got aboard Air Force One, and even before it took off, he was phoning all of these leaders, Germany, UK, France, Italy, Finland, several others, and saying, hey, I'd like you to be in Washington, D.C. on Monday morning. And they all agreed, and they showed up, along with Volodymyr Zelensky, the head of the Ukrainian government, and they had a meeting yesterday as to how to move forward. And we are told in the midst of meeting with these Western leaders and the leader of Ukraine, President Trump a couple of times, I think, stepped out and called Vladimir Putin. This is where we are. This is what we're saying. And talked about the possibility of getting Zelensky and Putin together to perhaps bring about a peace in this war. Anyway, this morning, President Trump was on Fox and Friends. Lawrence Jones, who is one of the hosts there, asked the president how he arranged this meeting so fast. And this is what he had to say. Cut number two.
Well, Mr. President, the whole world was watching yesterday as you got leaders from the European Union, NATO, as well from all over the world. How did you get them to Washington, to the Oval Office, so fast?
Well, I think really they have respect for our country again. A year ago, they wouldn't have come. They wouldn't have even thought about it. Now, we've become the hottest country anywhere in the world. Everybody wants to be here. When I made the call, they came. And they said there's really never been anything like it. You know, you'd have one president or one prime minister, but there's never been, you know, such a group. And these really represent the European nations, these people. And they're very good people. And they want to end the war, that horrible war with Ukraine and Russia. It's a horrible war.
And the image is important. And one of the military analysts that Fox uses very often, retired General Jack Keane, says this summit, the images of this meeting yesterday in Washington, he says, no issue about this. This was directed also at Putin, seeing this allied force come together. Cut number five.
He already knows that he's internationally isolated by invading Ukraine. He already knows that there's sanctions imposed on him from the European nations and from the United States. He does have partners, and those partners are all authoritarian regimes that are up to malfeasance themselves in China, Iran, and North Korea. So certainly he got the message, you know, that there is unity here, that there is a not only are they coming together, but the way they come together and the way they talk to each other, you can feel the commitment and the resolve in moving towards peace.
Also in that room yesterday was NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte. He says Trump is the only person on earth who could have pulled off this deal. Cut number seven.
I hope the Americans see this. Probably one of his biggest foreign policy successes of his president, of Trump 47, is that during the NATO summit, we committed collectively to this 5% spending, including 3.5% on the core defense spending. That's the same the U.S. is spending. He always said that he supported NATO, but he also expected the Europeans to pay up, to spend more. He has been successful in doing this. So today, the conversation was a conversation among friends, among close allies who respect each other, who like each other, who know each other very well, discussing how we can bring this terrible war to an end. And this is a goal we all have in common. And without President Trump, this deadlock with Putin would not have been broken. He was the only one who could do that, starting in February.
Well, I think that part of the motivation on the part of these leaders from certain select countries in Europe is that if you're going to, you got to strike while the iron's hot. And if something's going to, first of all, if something's going to be done, you got to meet now, because this has been, President Trump is trying to get something done between Ukraine and Russia. But also I think that knowing that Zelensky was coming to meet with Donald Trump, these European leaders wanted to let Zelensky know that they were supportive of Ukraine. So, I mean, I don't think it's because our country is, you know, the greatest in the world or anything like that.
That's, what?
Yes, I don't think that was the...
Nobody's ever seen anything like it. Ed?
I don't think that was the reason why they came. These are very busy people. They're leading their own countries. I think they wanted to support Zelensky, and they know that if... Well, listen, I'll just tell you something else, too. If something does get done, these folks want part of the credit. You know, they want to say, look, we showed up, too. It wasn't just, you know, Trump. I never put it past politicians to pat themselves on the back. So I'm guessing there's some of that
in there, too. I did like something President Trump said, and I don't think we have the audio clip of this, but I was reading what he said. You know, sometimes President Trump, just says things plainly, right?
Right.
Now, they're always the greatest and the best, and nobody's ever seen anything like it. Of course, we're used to that with him,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
So you just take that with a grain of salt. But he did say this. He said, I am the president, and I'm trying to stop people from killing each other.
Yeah.
He put it on the bottom shelf. We all can understand that. I will give President Trump, he deserves credit here because – I guess you could say it is his responsibility as the leader of the free world to try to broker a peace in between Ukraine and Russia. The Ukrainians and the Russians both, you know, have been friends of America. I mean, we've had our differences, especially with Russia over the decades. Yes, but I mean, there's been some times of friendly relationships with the Russians, but I'm just saying President Trump could say, you know, they say it's not my problem. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time, energy and effort trying to resolve something that's not my problem. It's not our problem as the United States. He could take that approach is what I'm saying.
Right.
Now, he did President Trump not to put American troops on the ground. Yes. He made that clear this morning.
Yes.
Yeah.
And of course, we kind of knew that. He's never said we're going to send American troops, although he did say maybe we would supply some kind of air support for the Ukrainians. I doubt we'll do that either. But President Trump, but Wesley is trying his best to end this war. It is, of course, we don't live it, but the Ukrainian people in particular have been living this, And the Russians too. Of course, they can't do anything about it. The Russians can't because they're under dictatorship, basically.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Trump really loses much here either way, because at the end of the day, he has exhausted all that he can do, and he's still going. At the moment, just 2 weeks ago, we thought that I was saying on radio 2 weeks ago he needs to just drop it, move on. And I still feel like that in some ways until you have a meeting like this and you're like, well,
yeah,
maybe he can pull it off again. I don't think he loses much. I do know, though, that this can't – he, meaning Trump, can't do this forever. So
you mean keep trying to broker a peace deal?
Yeah, while we also have our own issues at home, you know, home meaning United States of America. So I don't know. I'm happy that – I think his motives are clear. And I think his intentions are right. And I think he's also not doing it for free. You know, he's asking for stuff in exchange too. So while also keeping at the forefront of his point, and that is, like you said, plain speak, and that's to end an endless war, at least in the minds of us, the American people. Like, this shouldn't have happened. Like you mentioned that yesterday on the radio, I was listening to these issues.
Good. Yeah. Ed sharing his heart?
It was sharing his heart. It was either yesterday. It had been yesterday, Monday. Yeah. But that you essentially, if you want to go stay on that bottom shelf, you have a bad guy attacking another country. Now, again, we know Ukraine has its own issues, but they were living their lives before they were attacked. So
yeah. Yeah, it's
you're welcome for all that, guys. I'm gonna go get some popcorn real quick. I'll be back.
It's quite an analysis, right?
Good radio voice, though. No doubt. You're welcome.
All right, so we will see what happens, but it was a big meeting yesterday. A lot of European leaders there, as you say, Fred, and President Trump is trying to do his best to bring an end to this war. Vladimir Putin has basically, he's basically. How would you say he's rejected any idea so far of ending the war short of getting what he wants? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Which is, I don't know if he wants to, he would like to take over the whole Ukraine, but at least it looks like to me he's going to want a quarter of the Ukraine. I'm talking about geographically. So, I don't know. He may say no to that because that he hasn't agreed to that yet. It doesn't sound like to me.
I don't think he's going to give up the areas that they've taken. You know, they started this in 2014. Mm-hmm. They took Crimea.
Yes.
And it seems clear to me that
they being the Russians.
The Russians. It seems clear to me that Putin has had his eye on certain parts of Ukraine that would, you know, give him, you know, a port right there on the you know, the Black Sea, you know, and that rich, mineral-rich area of Ukraine, as well as part of the breadbasket of Ukraine where they produce so much wheat. And they've lost 1 million in terms of deaths and casualties, injuries. Yeah. He's not giving that back.
I don't think – it doesn't appear to me like Putin – now, he did meet with President Trump. Mm-hmm. He did physically meet with President Trump, but I don't think he much cares what America does if America's not going to use their military might against him.
Yeah, that's why. Obviously, we're talking about Trump meeting and us being the United States. What are other countries doing to try to end this war?
Well, these European countries, you know, they're trying to exert their influence as much as they can. But, you know, the sanctions that have been put against Russia, I mean, they've been in place for, what, 2-3 years now. So
And some of the sanctions have been in place since he invaded Crimea.
Yeah, so they don't do anything. They don't stop him.
Right.
It's intended to stop Putin. And
the mindset of the Russians seems to be they will throw lives at a problem. This goes all the way back to Stalin, and people say that Putin is a Stalinist. He has that kind of mindset of Joseph Stalin, the communist ruler, and they defended Moscow and Stalingrad, you know, in World War II. And really, we probably wouldn't have won World War II if Russia hadn't lost millions of lives.
Coming in from the east,
against, well, and defending against the Nazis. So I don't think Putin cares that they have 1 million casualties.
No.
Because that's just the mindset of the Russians. Well, guess what? We've got more.
Well, they've even got mercenaries coming over from
North Korea.
North Korea. I don't even know if they're mercenaries. They're just fodder.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate they're human beings, but, I mean, the North Koreans are sending soldiers.
In exchange for money.
That don't know how to fight. They just know how to march over to the front lines against the Ukrainians. So the Ukrainians have been having to fight against the Russian war machine.
Yeah.
And the Russians just keep throwing wave after wave of soldiers there.
And it's been a courageous stand on the part of Ukraine.
Oh, yeah.
I thought they would fold in a week or two weeks.
Yeah.
And here it is 3.5 years later.
All right. Next story.
There's just one more aspect of this. A lot of people are waiting to see the relationship between Trump and Zelensky yesterday in the week of what happened in February.
Right. Yeah.
They had the verbal Donnybrook.
Yes.
On live television to the world.
Right.
Well, it was kiss and makeup time yesterday. It was President Trump, literally the arm around the shoulder of Zelensky. And
Zelensky wore a suit.
Is
that what that was?
Trump made a remark about
that. I think he had a T-shirt under a suit or something.
Black on black on black.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Like, as an Italian, big Johnny, I liked it.
Big Johnny Cash fan.
It was good.
And Tim, you sent out a story on the most popular word coming out of Zelensky's mouth yesterday was "thank you, thank you, thank you."
He was groveling, pretty much.
Yes.
I mean, he was sucking up to Trump.
Yeah.
All right. Is that plain speak right there?
I think he was probably told you can't go into someone else's house and act that way. You've got to be respectful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he was respectful. He was like, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
But the February thing, that was just atrocious behavior.
That was like you're sitting watching this. This is live TV.
Talking about February?
Yeah, in the Oval Office. And there's a verbal Donnybrook broke up.
You remember J.D. Vance was in on it?
Oh, man.
On a more serious note, if I can be that way for just a moment here.
Yeah.
Zelensky, how do you pronounce his first name?
Volodymyr.
Huh?
Volodymyr.
Okay. I just think we should avoid that.
Okay. Zelensky. I will. Zelensky. That's why I asked Fred to do it. Okay. On a more serious note, and I'm not going to, I know a lot of people, especially in the, a lot of people who are conservatives would say, Zelensky and the Ukraine are corrupt. Okay, I'm not going to argue that point right now.
Right.
Okay, I'm just going to say this because I don't know all the ins and outs of that situation. I will just say this: if you're Zelensky, okay, he has been the leader of a country at war now for how long?
3.5, right?
Yeah.
February of 2022.
Okay. And I have to give the, on a human level, I have to give the guy admiration.
Right.
For being able to hold up against and lead a country. Basically, they don't have a lot of people in their army. They basically recruited the men of their country.
Yeah.
To fight back against the Russian war machine. And they've been brutally attacked. I don't know, can you be attacked any other way? But the Russians have been kidnapping their children,
yeah,
and taking them to Russia. You read this story?
Yeah. We talked about it yesterday.
So I'm saying to you, when you're Zelensky and you go meet with somebody like President Trump, you're inside, you're in tears. You're going, we are fighting the very best we can with limited resources, and I'm begging you to help me in the name of freedom.
Yeah.
In the name of saving my countrymen's and right. our children's lives from this assault by Russia. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I just have admiration for him as a person. I know that some people say he's... I don't know. Do you know if he's corrupt or not?
I don't.
And tell me what world leader isn't.
Huh? Well, no, I don't know all, like you said, all the ins and outs of that. There have been, listen, the guy, people talk about him, they say, look, he's just a former actor and dancer and that kind of stuff. And I go, well, that makes it even more impressive.
Well, you know, so is Trump. Trump's a TV star and a businessman.
And Ronald Reagan was a famous.
Yeah, so what are you saying? What does that mean?
No, what I'm saying is
he
wasn't a politician from age 18. So he, you know, he becomes elected perhaps because he was well known as someone who was on television. But the fact that he has done what he has done to try to rally
for 3 years,
his people for over 3.5 years, makes it only more impressive, like you're saying.
And he does have his hand out. He does. He has had his hand out because he doesn't have the money or resources to keep fighting against Russia, who has seemingly endless resources. So, he's going to have his hand out.
We've been involved in military conflicts over the last 30 years where we have almost run out of cruise missiles. These things are highly technical. They're very expensive, and you don't turn a Ford plant into a tank manufacturing plant like we did in World War II to crank out weapons. So, he's asked for weapons. He's asked because they are running out. And Europe...
He's not asking for troops.
Right.
He's always just asked for...
We want to fight the war. Please give us...
Yeah.
We're running out of ammunition.
Yeah.
In a simplistic way of putting it. So, no, listen. When I say Ukraine, and I have said this on the air, Ukraine is just going to have to accept the fact that they're going to lose the territory that Russia is sitting on. Because there's no way to get it back unless Europe and the United States want to go to war with a nuclear-armed Russia.
Yeah, but
nobody wants to do that.
But I think it goes back to, is Putin willing to stop, too?
Yeah, Putin may want the whole country. Putin may say, I want the whole country.
Well, at that point, if he pushes further, I think NATO would intervene. I really do. And I think that's part of why Putin has met
and Trump's trying to prevent that.
Yes.
Trump's trying to.
I think so.
We're going to take a short time out right here. How you like that, ladies and gentlemen, for our geopolitical.
That's deep analysis.
Yeah, that's right there, my friend. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stern. Stand by for news and commentary next. Vacation Bible School may be old school, but it's still very popular among kids across the Fruited Plain. CBN News reports nearly 3 million kids attended VBS at Southern Baptist churches over the summer, some 70,000 making a personal decision to follow Christ. Vacation Bible School, a week-long affair hosted by churches featuring fun adventure themes for kids, along with arts and crafts, singing, and lots of recreation. Many churches turn snack time into an art form. You know, when I was a kid, I got to double dip. I went to my family's Baptist church VBS. Then I attended my grandparents' VBS at the Methodist church. Now, the Methodist had a lot better snacks. Almost switched denominations as a second grader because of that. The surge in VBS attendance could be a sign that more young families are now returning to the traditions of our faith. And the best part, kids actually want to get up early to go to VBS. Public school, yeah, not so much. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
You know, it is a fine line between being the when you're the most powerful country in the world, right?
Right.
As the United States is, then it is a heavy responsibility to know exactly where to exert your influence, and how much of the world do you want to police?
Yeah.
Because if the United States of America had not been, quote, the world's policeman in other wars, in other times of crisis, then we wouldn't have had a good result, potentially.
Well, the fact of the matter is, most military experts believe we would not have the kind of worldwide trade we have without the U.S. Navy being able to help keep those lanes safe.
Right.
And to your point, if you see a conflict, whether it's in Rwanda or Nigeria or that those kind of things, Somalia, and you go, well, we could stop that if we wanted to. We've got the military might to stop it. You would have endless wars.
Yes.
And so America has to pick and choose where it's going to get involved.
I think that's the phrase that applies here, is pick and choose.
Yeah.
Because you also can't take the view
of Wesley.
Of being, well, being, yes, of Wesley, yes. Of being a complete isolationist.
I can be picked on. Go for
right.
it.
No,
I can handle
you,
it.
You can't. You can't just. Listen, America. We're since Iraq and Afghanistan, we're just weary of
right.
Okay, weary of wars and sending our men and women around the world to be the world's policeman. So there's, I understand the argument against, there's been a great pullback against that. And that's been basically in the Make America Great movement.
And, yeah. And I'll just say one last thing, and then we'll let Wesley defend himself.
And we have Jenna here.
If I think what we learned in Afghanistan and Iraq is you can't use the military to change people's minds or their religion. Or the way, or their worldview. Mm-hmm. You can't use a cruise missile to change the way someone views the world. And in places like Nigeria and Somalia, where you have these radical Islamic factions that murder people, you kill them, and their kids grow up hating the West too. So I think that is at least part of why the younger generations go, no, I don't spend 20 years in another country. I don't want to go, and I don't want to send my children to fight. When we leave, they believe the same thing and do the same thing, like in Afghanistan with the Taliban.
Just let me introduce Jenna, and then, Fred, you can comment.
And then we still got to let Wesley defend
the family. Yeah, I got notes over here.
Wesley's in isolation, so we're going to put him over there by himself.
There you go. Okay, in the corner. Saying?
Okay, Jenna Ellis is with us, host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning. She joins us Wednesdays usually here on American Family Radio's Today's Issues program. Jenna, good morning.
Good morning.
All right, let Fred comment, and then Jenna, you can jump in there, and then Wesley can have his three words.
I do think Trump is using an element that other presidents have not used, and that is trade.
Right.
Like it or not, the world is connected by trade.
Duly noted.
I mean, the India-Pakistan uprising there just a few months ago, he stopped that.
Right.
By threatening tariffs.
Yeah.
And Trump, being a business guy, understands that. And he is using that. He's using that tool because aboard that Soviet plane that landed in Alaska last Friday were a bunch of Russian business people.
Yeah.
So this is all part of the game. He is using that like no other president could or did.
Right.
Hey, Jenna, good morning to you.
Good morning. Great to be with you guys. And sounds like an interesting conversation. So, you know, I'm just coming in here. But to Ed's point earlier about you can't conquer a person's mind. And I think that's a really important point, that you can't just go in with brute force and change someone's, you know, religion or their affiliation and expect them to assimilate. And the whole Western ideology of property rights, free markets, contracts, I mean, that's become the dominant framework for international business. And to Fred's point with trade and all of this, but when we're trying to quote unquote spread democracy, it has to be through advocating for a worldview. And that's why it takes a lot longer than just coming in and saying, okay, we've conquered and now we leave. If you're truly going to spread democracy, however we define that, if that's Western culture, you have to come in and actually stay in. I mean, that was one of the biggest impacts that there was. What was the movie? I'm forgetting what it was. The senator who helped
Dumb and Dumber.
that was a good one about. I think those both of those senators were probably from Kentucky, right? But no. the one senator who, you know, really helped go in and, you know, reshape a lot of the groundwork and everything in. You know, in some of these Middle Eastern countries, and this was back,
yeah,
I think,
was
in the 80s.
Charlie something's war.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm. That's exactly what I'm talking
and it was,
about.
And it was a U.S., was it a senator? Or I think, I'm
going to
look that up.
You go ahead. But yeah. So that, and it's a really interesting movie, and Tom Hanks plays him. But basically what he was saying
Charlie
at the end
Wilson's
of it,
War.
Wilson, Charlie Wilson's War. Great, great movie. And this, the whole story, though, where he's saying we're spending millions and millions of dollars to just go in and stop all of the bloodshed. But he said, but what we didn't do was spend the extra couple of million to build schools and actually stay there and help these people understand more than just going in and stopping the headlines. And that was his whole point through the entire spending of Congress and, you know, trying to spread democracy.
A couple of things on my position, and I'm willing to grow and learn and develop.
Good.
Unlike being isolated into the corner for three words. I'm just kidding. On all seriousness, I err on the side of coming out of the Middle East. I err on the side of letting each country be personally responsible for themselves and take care of themselves. And it's unfortunate, but wars happen, and land is conquered in two ways. It's by purchase or by force, and it's unfortunate. Now, with that said, I'm not an isolationist to the point why you couldn't give me an example in which I may not have exceptions to where it's proper or right or just cause to partner with a country for the purpose of ending something.
Right.
But I'm 100% opposed to the long-term nation building. I don't even think, in some cases, the way Jenna described it, I don't even know if that didn't even work in the Middle East. You know?
No, well, look how long we were in. I don't know what Iraq looks like today exactly, but look how long we were in Afghanistan.
And Hamas does what it does. So I'm not opposed to having a start and an end, saying, okay, we're going to go in. We're going to do this militarily to stop this killing and then get out. There are times you could probably convince me that's a moral just thing.
Yeah.
But if you're going to sit down and try to convince me that over these 20 years, if we spend this amount of money and that we do this and we do that, that's irrelevant to me. I care more about what's going on in our country than what's going on in other parts of the world.
Yeah. Well, with Afghanistan, for example, you know, we were there. How long were we in there? 20 years?
20 years.
20 years, yeah.
We had some military presence there throughout the country, and we left, and the Taliban took right back over.
Right.
Yes.
So, you know, you have to – what I'm saying is, and I think where we're all agreeing, a president, whoever he may be, has to make a value judgment on –
case by case.
Case by case on how to exert American influence, and either economically or militarily. Go ahead.
Last point for me on this is that I do like that when Trump does something to help out, even whether I disagree from a position-wise, I like the fact that we get something out of it. Even right. if I don't like being involved in another war, at least we signed a deal to get minerals for it. You know what I mean? We're getting something for
it. Listen, I like what the way Trump's handling weapons going to Ukraine.
Yes.
Rather than us giving them the weapons, he's saying, look, Europeans, you're so invested in this.
Why don't you buy
them? You buy them from us.
That's right.
And you can give them.
That's at least something out of it.
Yeah. You need to squeeze people who are under
pressure.
Like Zelensky,
yes,
for example. You need to tell him, hey,
you
pay up or you die.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Huh? So I understood. That's what? No, you know what? We're taking a – we have Jenna on.
Hey, listen, in order to keep this conversation from prolonging, I'll just concede with that, Dad. I agree with that.
Right. you need to pay up.
Okay, well, then now I'm going to say, okay, the Europeans are the ones who want us involved, and they've got enough money to buy the weapons – that Ukraine wants, and the weapons that Ukraine wants
that's
are our weapons.
That's called negotiation, Dad.
Yeah, and so listen, Europe's got plenty of money. There's no reason why we have to give them away. That you could interpret that as you clearly did.
However you want.
As squeezed Ukraine. I'm saying we squeezed Europe, and Ukraine's getting the weapons no matter what.
All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Wesley, Fred, and Jenna. Jenna, I wanted to talk about this story you covered having to do with this truck driver in Florida who was an illegal alien. Talk about that. What happened
there? Yeah, this is an utter tragedy coming out of my home state, but really all eyes are turning to California because this is an illegal that came into the U.S. And somehow obtained not just a driver's license, but a commercial driver's license, so a CDL, out of the state of California, and then was driving on the Florida Turnpike. This was back on August 12th, and went in one of those police lanes, it was illegal, and tried to do a U-turn basically in the middle of the freeway, and ended up causing a crash with a minivan, and three people lost their lives because of it. So he's been arrested, and I had on yesterday morning the Florida Attorney General, James Uthmeyer, who is saying that he's going to prosecute this to the fullest extent of the law, and this illegal will serve his time in the state of Florida and then be deported. But the conversation, the policy conversation out of this that has been raised is how the impact of the sanctuary cities, the lack of border control, the giving of illegals driver's licenses and other privileges without citizenship can really impact red states because of the full faith and credit clause, because of interstate commerce and all of this. And so the analysis now from Governor DeSantis, who will actually join my show in the morning at 8:05 Eastern, so definitely tune in for that. The policy analysis is what can Florida do, what can other red states do to keep the policies of the liberal states under control and not impacting our conservative areas.
Let me ask you this, Jenna. Why? By the way, I saw the video of this accident, and folks were talking. Was this on an interstate?
Yeah, the Florida Turnpike. And
okay.
So, yeah, it's an interstate.
Okay. Well, I was shocked that this driver that we're talking about here, he was doing a U-turn with an 18-wheeler.
Yeah.
On an interstate, and I thought, what an idiot!
And covered the whole interstate.
Yeah. Well, that's why these poor souls in this van go flying down the interstate, the turnpike, wherever that is exactly, and they went under that truck, or they crashed into terrible. That truck, and we know, you know, it was
75 plus miles.
The three people died, and I'm going like, I don't know where you, what truck driving school you would ever go to, which would say it's okay to try to do a U-turn.
It wouldn't matter if you're an illegal immigrant. You're just
yes, and the other part is here. What? Why do these, Jenna? Tell me the reasoning why. Try to defend the defenseless here, I guess. Why do these blue states want people here who are in the country illegally, why do they want to give them driver's licenses?
Yeah, that was actually a question that I asked the AG yesterday, because my former home state of Colorado, I was actually working at one of the district attorney's offices when this whole debate happened in Colorado. And the policy rationale that some even Republicans at the time supported, because Colorado does give licenses to illegals, is that they're going to drive anyway. And so we might as well give them driver's licenses, because without a license, you can't obtain insurance. And so if you get in an accident and you don't have insurance, then that's actually not protecting the person who you end up in a collision with. And so, and the AG's response to that rationale, I think, is what I agree with, and what is common sense is, no, you don't enable them to help break the law just because they're going to do it anyway. Doesn't mean that we say, okay, we'll go ahead and actually have the state license this. And to your point, I mean, there was a quote from a gentleman in ABC 12 News. His name's Grant Maxey. He's been driving commercial trucks for 30 years. And he said that the driver in this case, his actions were not only illegal, but senseless. There's no reason that he had to do this U-turn where he did, especially in this giant truck that covered all, you know, all lanes of the freeway. He could have gone down to the next exit, went over the overpass, and turned around. I mean, there was no emergency. I mean, it was utterly, I mean, even if somebody, like, I don't have a commercial driver's license, but even I would know that that's stupid.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, because an 18-wheeler can accelerate. I've seen people try to use that emergency turn to make a U-turn. Well, that's a little, it's still dangerous, but at least you can, when you get on the interstate, you can accelerate and get up to speed fairly quickly. You can't do that in an 18-wheeler. If you're going to try to make that move, you are going to be going slow. We all know how slow it is, how 18-wheelers are slow till they can get up to speed. But I want to just toss this in, too. The reason I think Democrats want to give driver's licenses to illegals is to make it easier for them to vote. Mm-hmm. That's what I think the reason is. Now, they may cover it politically by saying even Republicans have said, well, they're going to drive illegally anyway, so we might as well give them driver's license so they can get insurance. I think Democrats want to let them go to the poll and vote by putting that driver's license down as an ID.
Somebody once said liberalism is a mental disorder, mm-hmm. and this is a prime example. If you're going to take the logic such that it is that we're going to give people here who are here in our country illegally, issue them driver's license, then, and you're going to say, well, they're going to drive anyway. Well, then let's give teenagers beer.
Yeah.
Let's just have a place where teenagers can safely go get beer.
Yeah.
Because,
don't give them any ideas, Tim. They're going to start having those. They're going to have, you know, sanctuary dry, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, because you could argue, well, teenagers are going to drink anyway. Yeah.
Well, the Democrat reasoning here is only makes sense. It doesn't really make sense, but it only makes sense if you can plan to continue to leave the border wide open. In my mind, if everyone was following and holding the border secure, then what you say is, no, you don't give them driver's licenses, and the answer, well, they're going to drive anyway. Yeah, and when we catch them, we deport them.
Right, right.
But these Democratic states don't want to deport them.
I think the Democrats want to say, when we catch illegals, we take them to register to vote.
Yes,
That's the next stand. Right. Fred, you wanted to add?
Jenna, quick question, legal question. Could the family of these dear people who died in this, could they sue the state of California?
Right.
That's a great question. And I know that the AG is looking at ways to not only hold the state of California accountable, but also the company that that apparently put this guy behind the wheel. I mean, there's got to be some accountability for some.
Yeah, he had a commercial. He had a commercial driver's license, not just a you know, for an automobile.
A private, I mean, right. So there are a lot of questions here. And my question to him as well was, you know, when you have this kind of interstate, you know, going from one state to the next. A lot of these commercial trucks, they're required at the port of entry to go and get weighed, and they can get a lot of fines and so forth if they're too heavy to drive on the roads and all that. Why not ask at that point in Florida for some kind of documentation in addition to a CDL of, you know, of citizenship or something else at the point of entry? I mean, that would probably, you know, go up to the Supreme Court and all of that. But, I mean, why not at least try to make some of these things, like protect the borders of your own state as well from other states that are allowing this.
Listen, also, just on the broader picture, what Biden did by opening up the border for the last 4 years, of course, it cost the Democrats the election, one of the primary reasons. So they did play a political consequence. But to let 10 to 15 million people or more in, just pour into the country, don't know who they are, where they're coming from,
where the children wind up.
No, don't know any of that. And it based, we all know what happened. Biden just said, y'all come and we'll let you in. And they did. They did from around the world. This fella here was a Sikh. He had a head dress on that. So I don't know what country he was from originally, you know, but he came over the southern border, I think. And so... But here's the problem. The ramifications of this are showing up now on an almost daily basis. We are hearing news stories are coming out of crimes being committed by these people who poured into our country illegally. And it's almost either you read about it in your local newspaper, you see it in your local news, or in this case, it makes national news. But these people who poured into our country, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Many of them are bad news. Go ahead.
We're still suffering the effects of that. And this is why one of the big reasons that a lot of conservatives supported the One Big Beautiful Bill was because it authorized a lot more funding for ICE and Tom Homan and border security, because we need to have expeditious deportations. And yet the Democrats are still doubling down, because today, if anyone is listening from California, there will actually be a rally with Pastor Jack Hibbs, among others, in Sacramento at the state capitol. They have a permit for all of that and everything. But the Democrats are doubling down on all of this because of California's Assembly Bill 495. I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but it's known as the Family Preparedness Plan. But really what it does is basically, it's an expansion of authorizations for a caregiver that parents don't even have to be notified, that someone can just come into a daycare, potentially a church, a school, and just give a signed affidavit that they are a caregiver of that child and can actually take custody of the child. And the pretext from the Democrat assembly members in California that are trying to get this bill pushed through is to say, well, if the parents of this child are deported, then we want to make sure that there's kind of a succession of custody plan. But what it does is basically opens the floodgates for a lot of child trafficking, among other things, because it reduces the safeguards around child custody. And so Pastor Jack Hibbs, in a message that he posted on Instagram last week, said, if this passes, I'm encouraging my whole church members to just leave California because your children aren't safe. I mean, this is the Democrats' utter absurdity.
Yeah.
By the way, this guy, the truck driver, is originally from India. Harjinder Singh is from India.
Hey, we need to mention our articles up on this. Our news stories up on this on AFN.
Yep.
American Family News.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, Jenna, thanks so much for joining us here this morning. And so you got Governor Ron DeSantis as your guest tomorrow morning?
Yes. So at 7:05 Central, 8:05 Eastern. So right off the top. And then on Thursday, our new Lieutenant Governor, Jay Collins, will also join me to talk about potentially the future of Florida and, you know, Florida blueprint, make America Florida. Ron DeSantis is term limited. So all eyes are on the governor's race there. And so we're anticipating that the new Lieutenant Governor will jump into that race very shortly. So it's going to be interesting.
Now, Governor DeSantis, as you say, he's twice elected, but his term runs out. When does his term run out?
So January of 2027. So the election is next November.
Okay.
For governor. So okay. And of course, Congressman Byron Donalds has already announced, has been endorsed by Trump, but now Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins, who was in the state legislature, has been appointed, and Governor DeSantis has a lot of great things to say about him. So we'll see if Trump does that dual endorsement, which, you know, he's often done in significant Republican primaries. So it's going to be interesting in Florida.
All right. Thanks, Jenna. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Okay. That's Jenna Ellis joining us right there.
That's going to be great. I'm going to listen in on the interview with
Governor DeSantis.
Governor DeSantis.
So he's got January. She said he'll be out January 27. That's what she said.
Because of the election's 26, yeah. Right? November.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see what the future holds for Governor Ron DeSantis because, you know, he's still a relatively young guy.
Yeah.
Is there any other place or option or opportunity in Florida for him to serve? Or?
Well, he might run for Senate, I guess, maybe, if he wanted to.
He doesn't strike me as a
senator,
as a legislator.
No,
he's an executive.
He was in the House of Representatives.
Yes.
But my guess is best case scenario for him would be
cabinet member.
A cabinet member for a J.D. Right. Vance administration, for example.
Yep.
Or Marco Rubio, you know, he's been mentioned as a prime candidate to be the Republican nominee next time around. But J.D. Vance, you would think, would be the heir apparent, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
If all goes well.
It'd be tough to beat him.
But I would say Ron DeSantis in a J.D. Vance administration, that would be a good fit.
Yep.
He's only 46.
DeSantis? Yeah.
He's a young guy.
All right, we'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.